Hey, Zero Block 30 listeners, you can find us every Tuesday and Friday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. Prime members can also listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Quality sleep optimizes recovery, helping professional and everyday athletes perform their best. Only the Sleep Number Smart Bed is proven to improve the quality of sleep and provides valuable insights that can be used to support overall wellness. Talent on a college team allows the best players to outperform their opponents, but in the NFL, everyone is talented. Players entering the draft need every competitive edge they can get, starting with quality sleep. Training will only get more intense as players transition to the pros, so to optimize recovery, they can rely on Sleep Number for consistent, high-quality sleep. Experience game-changing sleep with a Sleep Number smart bed only at a Sleep Number store.
This week's episode of Zero Block 30 is brought to you by our good friends at DraftKings. We are recording right now. It's Thursday. You don't know what right now is, but we are recording right now, which is a Thursday. The NFL season kicks off. You've been waiting for this fucking day since February 6th, and football is finally back, bitch. We are going to give you the opportunity to not only have football and your weekends of watching the NFL and college football back, but we're going to give you the opportunity to win $1 billion. That's right, friends, $1 billion. With DraftKings, there are many ways to play. You just have to go to DraftKings.com now and use the promo code CHAPS to play in DraftKings free contest with $100,000 in total prizes for this Sunday. And if you draft the absolute perfect lineup, spoiler alert, Blake Bortles is going to be the quarterback for that. You're going to get $1 billion. The contest is totally free to enter. Why wouldn't you try? You're an idiot if you don't try to get $1 billion. I don't like to shit on our listeners, but if you don't even try this shit, you're a dumbass. Let's go. I have in the studio, as always, Captain Cons. My man, Captain Cons, is here. But we also have a young fella that we used to go by. Oh, Hungry Eyes. I don't know if you remember, but let's play a little Hungry Eyes for Riggs' first appearance on Zero Block 30 in a while. Riggsy, how you doing, buddy?
Hit me with my damn music. I'm doing well, boy.
I forgot you had a theme music, a theme song.
It is nice to be back. Feels good. Feels nice to hear Chaps' voice. Chaps, your ad reading is sounding good, my friend.
He has improved greatly.
Well, that being said, this is the one-year anniversary show. We're having a little one-year anniversary show. I've been reading ads for a year now, baby. I'm ready to go.
Man,
let's do it. I learned how to read.
You were buzzing on that ad read. I was sitting here like, this show has come a fucking long way. These guys are cruising.
We are a professional bunch now.
Oh, yeah.
You know, just because you're not on the show doesn't mean you can't listen, subscribe, review, 5 stars. We need more of that going on anyways in the iTunes department.
So yeah, I want to bump us back up to number one, so please. Rate, review, subscribe.
Yeah, fuck Bernie Sanders. Hey, Bernie, if you're listening, bitch, we're going to come for that. We're coming for your nuts, Bernie. We're coming for your nuts more than Hillary Clinton's book did.
Oh, yeah. Hillary's going after everybody. People are not too happy about it, but I don't know how deep we want to get right now, boys.
I'd be doing that, too. If I was Hillary, I had a bitter, bitter loss, I'd be spraying everybody, praying and spraying and going after folks.
So, yeah. Riggs, what has she been saying, though?
She's trying to sell books. That's the number one thing right now, trying to sell books. I think it comes out next Tuesday. I can't wait to read it. So she's clearly doing a good job of leaking all this stuff. Mm. But she's burying people. She's doing the classic, like, totally my fault, but this fucked me. This guy fucked me. That person fucked me.
Not making excuses.
Yeah. So, it's been interesting. It was interesting to hear some of the behind the scenes that she, I think, leaked yesterday to CNN about the election night. Took a nap,
That was wild.
Which I thought was crazy. But I guess the more I started thinking about it, that fucking campaign trail is the worst thing in the world. Mm-hmm. It sounds like they never sleep ever. So finally she had nothing to do. I was like, I'm just going to go to fucking sleep.
Yeah, because what can you do
at
that point?
I feel like it. As so tired as you are, no matter what outcome comes, you just got to fucking roll with it at that point. I mean, we felt that way. That's probably one of the most vivid memories that I'll have that doesn't involve like a terror attack is like where you're at during presidential elections. And because that one swayed so heavily against what the majority of people in the news media thought was going to happen, it's going to be one of those where were you things. And I was sitting next to two idiots in PFT commenter Big Cat that were acting like they were from Brooklyn or Miami. And you were on the desk of the Barstool News Network, my friend.
I was slugging Oaks and Cokes. I'll never forget it. Doing the live coverage. And
breaking
we were,
that news.
It was kind of one of those things. You know, we went in thinking, it's going to be a little tricky to make this super interesting because everybody kind of knows the outcome. It's going to be pretty obvious as it rolls in with all the data and CNN and all these different news organizations. There's really no big surprises nowadays. And we were wrong. It was the classic Portnoy sold his soul to the devil in terms of getting the most content out of that. So I'll never forget where I was that night covering that big live production that we did. Shout out to Pete in there in the room.
Barstool News Network.
BNN. That was a big BNN deal. But yeah, her book's coming out. First. She's kind of dragging people through the mud.
Love it.
It's great. Spray and pray. Like you said, you can't blame her.
Yeah, and it's just so much of it now just feels like old news because there's been so many things that's happened in the 9 months since Trump's taken office. Like, it's just been a crazy whirlwind time. And another place that was old that you got to go to recently for a little Labor Day vacay, you did a little solo golf tour. Can you tell us about that?
I did. I went to Scotland. I spent 4 days, 4 nights in the St. Andrews area, Fife, Scotland. You know, I booked it about a month before I went on a whim. I'd been watching so much fucking Lynx golf with the British Open, the Women's British Open. They do the Scottish and Irish Opens where they play Lynx golf, which is so much different than the shit that we see on TV, all these pristine kind of private American courses. And I got such a kick, and I just said, you know, screw it. And I booked flights, booked a trip around it, figured I'd wing it. I played 6 rounds in 4 days, played the old course at St. Andrews twice, which is just, if you're a golfer, which Chaps is quickly becoming a huge golfer, which we've documented on Foreplay, subscribe, rate, download, all that.
There it is.
It's just the coolest experience in the world. So I'm still giddy. I've been beaming nonstop since I got over there, which was, a week ago. It was Friday. Took a little red eye and, yeah, spent 4 days, 4 days, 4 nights, 6 rounds. I talked all about it on this week's show for about an hour and a half. And, yeah, people are really liking it. It's cool to take your game and take yourself to new places. You guys have gotten a lot of that experience in the military.
And it was interesting to hear before you went that you wanted to have super bad weather whenever you do a Lynx course, because that's what you see. Like, whenever you watch the Open and it's at St. Andrews, you want the terrible weather on Saturday and Sunday, so the guys are just battling, having to hit low shots that somehow stop spinning on those hard-ass greens. That got us thinking. Last couple weeks, it's been not only pumpkin spice season, not only pumpkin season, but it sure as fuck is hurricane season. I want to see if you go to your home course, Rick. Say we go to your home course, the course that you're most comfortable with of any spot in the world. You know every little nook and cranny of this motherfucker. If I took you to your home course and placed a little tiny, just sprinkled a little Category 1 hurricane over the top, do you think you could shoot under 110 in a Category 1
on your home course? I just started thinking about this kind of in the last couple of minutes, and I honestly, so this category, this thing's what, a category 4 or 5, Irma?
Yeah, Irma's 5.
Which is what, like 140, 150 mile an hour? Is
oh,
it
no, it was up to yeah. 185.
Yeah.
So 185 mile an hour winds. I mean, when you're playing golf and you have 30.
I don't think you can play in a category 5. I'm
no,
saying category
when,
1. When 5's not happening.
5, what's a cat 1, like?
Maybe 30 to 40
70.
Mile an hour.
No, I was going to say, 70? I think it's like 70, 80.
70. Oh, wow.
Is that right?
Yeah, what do I know?
Tropical storm is 45 to 70, and then anything above 70, and they only go 5 mile an hour. So as soon as it hits 75, then it becomes a category 1.
So when you've played a lot of golf, you've seen a little bit of everything, and typically—
That was talking weather.
That was talking weather. That was nice. We really got to the bottom of that. So when you typically play and you have an unbelievably windy day where you're walking around like, this is biblical, and telling everybody about it and blowing it out of proportion and all that, that's usually like 30, 35 mile an hour gusts maybe. So if you're talking 80 mile an hour winds, I'm nowadays like a 6 or 7 handicap. I don't think I could break like 100 or 110. I think that'd be fucking impossible. You hit your ball, if you don't hit absolutely perfect, it's just gone. Like, you just never see it
again.
If you're on an
elevated tee box, you got your driver out and you got the winds going with you, and it's a par 5, you might be on the green and one, my friend.
Yeah,
you just sky it up there.
Here's what's gonna happen. You're gonna bomb one like 400 yards. You're gonna hit
not
a little,
be able to see it.
You're gonna hit a little wedge into the green, and it's gonna bounce over the green like 80 yards over the green. You're gonna be like, "What the fuck do I do?"
That's
now?
The part that people are always thinking about, because this has been, the internet's going crazy with hurricane golf right now. So people are always talking about your iron play, your wedge play, and your driver. The hardest part of playing in a hurricane, I would think, would be the putting. Because it's just blowing all over the fucking joint.
Yeah, your ball would never fucking stop. Especially
yeah, I was
going
to say,
quick,
your ball would never come to a rest.
If you had like the quick American-style greens where they cut them like 11, 12, 13 on the stump, your ball is never going to stop on the greens. Like, never going to stop. So it would be, it would be it'd be on the green, like mark your ball and blow it into like a greenside bunker, and you'd never be all out of the bunker. It would be fucking chaos. It'd be awesome. It'd be really fun.
It would be. I'd love to do it, man.
See what it would be like. You know, some of the setups you'd have to do to address your ball and where you'd have to hit it.
Yeah, and it would be the winds would be so intense that it would be seriously affecting like the plane of your swing and your ability to like manipulate the club
true.
And your backswing and stuff like. You'd be feeling the wind yanking your swing and your club. It would
I didn't even think
fun.
About that. Yeah,
especially the driver, because they got those light, mm-hmm. you know, big-ass head club faces now. It'd be like, you'd be, it would be chaos. It would be complete and total chaos, which I would love.
And watching some of those videos of coming from the hurricane, especially the ones that are, especially, I've said especially my entire life, and somebody called me out on it, and I appreciate that. I'm going to try to correct that. So we're going to go back. Scratch that, reverse it, especially whenever you're flying through a hurricane like some of these crazy pilots do. Like, that shit is fucking wild, dude. Just absolute insanity flying through a hurricane.
Yeah, did you see the, what was it, like, the Delta guy who, I think it was yesterday, who was like, fuck it, we're going back, we're doing one more run into Florida and actually flew through, like, the outer
No, they went to
rim.
Puerto Rico. They went
to Puerto Rico. Okay, Puerto Rico. Through, like, the outer rim. Mm-hmm. Went, like, right into the fucking hurricane. Dropped off and then reboarded the entire plane in 40 minutes. Took off right back to New York.
Wow, that's impressive.
See, yeah.
If I'm going somewhere like Puerto Rico and I know that there's a hurricane coming, that's probably when I stay put. Like, I'm not checking for alerts to see if my Delta flight has changed, like, concourses or anything like that. I'm just assuming that I'm staying in Atlanta, man. And then on their way out, they flew, like, in between the two bands. And, like, Twitter was going absolutely apeshit about these pilots doing it. But it feels like, Cons, if you're the company commander there, you're failing them for OPSEC. It
yeah,
doesn't
seriously.
Feel like it's worth the risk.
No, you're not doing your proper due diligence there. And you're putting people in a lot of danger. So whoever okayed that for them to make that flight, I'd like to see what their thought process was. Like, oh, yeah, give it a shot. Go for it. Because, I mean, that could just been disastrous.
What if it was a classic override situation from the pilot? They're like, yeah, no, we're definitely not going to do it. We're fucking doing it.
I mean, then that's on him. That's, I mean,
you
see
you
that sometimes,
be,
but.
You got to be slamming Adderall. You got to be drinking Red Bulls vodka. I feel like there's no such thing as a DUI or airplaneing, piloting with a DUI if you're flying through a fucking hurricane. No. I mean, I like to take risks. I know you guys do. You took a risk of going and playing some of the greatest concerts in the world. Connor took a risk of getting out of the Army to go back up to New York and try to get a big boy job in New York. You could also take some risk by using mybookie.com or .ag this weekend to make a little bit of money for yourself by betting on all these damn NFL games. You can use the promo code ZERO to activate the offer where you get 100% bonus. I don't know a lot about math, but I know 100% bonus is actually good. Visit mybookie.ag today. You play, you win, you get fucking paid. They actually pay out. You could start this weekend making money on college football. You can bet on damn near anything. Check this website out. It's good. They actually pay like some of the other ones. So you can win $1 billion by doing some daily draft fantasy, and then you can bet the over-unders on mybookie.ag. Watching all these operational risk managements from the pilots and shit like that really got me kind of nostalgic about some of the stuff that we would do, like pre-deployment, pre-mission, pre-training. Our new podcast that we have on the Barstool Sports Network called Laces Out with Jerry Thornton, Pat McAfee, and AJ Hawk, they had some of those same type of experiences. Let's listen to them talk about what makes them miss football.
The stuff that sucks about football that I get reminded of. Like, if you're up early in the morning, it reminds me of when you have to put on the pads and go out and practice at 6 a.m., like as soon as the sun rises, you're out there killing each other. Like, I get that feeling. Or late at night, if you're out and it's like a weird, humid summer night, it feels like, oh, man, you got to wake up at 4:30 and get out there. My high school program, we worked out all summer at 5:15 in the morning and had three
Yikes.
Days and all that stuff. So I get nightmares of that stuff, which I'm glad I did it. But I don't know how I got through it. But those are the things that I get reminded of just from like smelling cut grass. It's never like, oh man, this smells like touchdowns and wins and victories here. Like, I don't ever get that smell.
That's funny you say that, because when I get drunk or intoxicated or inebriated on any drug and I get a little wobble and my knee locks up, I think like, oh, that's how I feel after most games right there. When my knee, I can't bend my fucking knee. I can't walk straight. Life sucks a little bit. That's kind of the only – you're right. It's only the negative memories that really come through, whether it's a smell of something or a feel of something. It's only the negative memories that come – and that's such a fucking sad existence now that I think about it.
Yeah, so I can imagine. After you've been out of the NFL for a while, it takes you to get that nostalgia. Like, I know Pat has talked about it before, where there's nothing about preseason that he missed. There's nothing about training camp that he misses. But I guarantee you that he's going to have those moments, just like Riggsy does. I'm sure Riggsy misses times of lacing him on for the old crimson and white. Don't you, Riggsy?
Oh, yeah, big time. But I think kind of what they talked about is correct, where a lot of times when I think back to it, I think of, like, the miserable shit.
Mm-hmm.
Like, getting
sometimes
bag skated at, like, on Saturday morning after you have a fucking shitty Friday night game, getting bag skated at, like, 6 or 7 a.m. being like, this is miserable. Why are we doing this? Why can't we just go party, right? Why are we playing
right,
hockey?
Right, right. And then, I mean, there's nights for me, like, football and the military, I'll be lying in bed and my back is in excruciating pain and I can't fall asleep and I'm thinking, why the hell did I do that to myself? Because now I'm in all sorts of pain and I can't get sleep at night. That was a great idea.
Yeah, I have the pussiest shins in the world, and I would get, you know, because we fucking ice skate. We don't run. And then in college, we did all this off-ice stuff. We do box jumps and, you know, all these little sprints and BS. And I get horrific shin splints.
Mm-hmm.
So I think about that where, like, I couldn't even walk. People be like, oh, what's wrong? And shin splints is one of those things that, like, sounds like you're a little bitch, but it's actually the worst thing in the world.
Oh, it's not a fun pain to
experience. Get horrible shin splints. Mm. It sucked.
Let's do a little round robin of things that you used to hate. I like the term round robin. That's a great fucking term. We need to bring that shit back.
Yeah, round robin.
Let's
nice.
Do a little. Yeah, let's do a little round robin of things that you hated at the time, but you think if you could go back and do it one more time, you might actually enjoy it. You need a minute?
No, I could say one right now. That would just be like preseason camp for football. At the time, you know, it's hot.
You don't get to use West Point football. Do Army shit. Come on.
I was going to do both, buddy. I thought we were going to keep going around.
All right. Carry on.
But no, I guess I would also say maybe those morning runs in the military. I don't get up now at 5 a.m. and go run at 5:30. But I do remember when I was in the military and I did that. That was a good feeling when you got done with a run for the day and you're like, all right, it's still early in the morning, got the whole morning ahead of me, got my day ready to go, and I already got a workout in. I feel great. I feel energized. I would say I missed that a little bit.
Okay. Riggsy?
So my dad's an extreme hiker. He's a big fucking hiker, outdoorsman, fisherman, and he goes to, like, Siberia. He goes to, like, Denali National Park.
Fuck.
He goes to all these crazy-ass places and goes on these crazy hikes, and he's a... You know, he's a dentist, but he's been involved in, like, farming and running and owning farms, like, on the weekends his whole life. He loves it. He loves hunting and all that. And he loves the struggle. He always says that. He's like, I fucking live for the struggle. Like, when I'm out there hiking and it's, like, raining and you're putting up your tent, you're trying to keep everything dry. He's like, it's miserable in the moment, but I fucking love it.
Mm-hmm.
And about 10 or 11 years ago, he brought my brother and I with him up in Alaska. We went on this, like, it was like a fishing/hiking trip. And we went, they dropped us off in, like, a real small little prop plane that lands on the water, drops you off, you kind of, like, float down this river, and the first, you know, 4 or 5 days were unbelievably, like, fun. We're fishing, we're hiking. The last 2 days, we were, like, out of supplies. It was freezing cold, and I'll just remember being like, this is fucking miserable. Like, what are we doing here? And about 2 or 3 days after the trip until this day now, I look back and I'm like, those last couple days were the coolest part of the trip.
Right.
Because you were just, like, out there, you're in nature, you're grinding, you're kind of, like, surviving, it feels like.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just one of those things. We're looking back on it. It was miserable at the time, but now it's, like, fucking awesome.
Yeah. And, I mean, speaking of the struggle, we've always said when you have beers, when you earn them, they taste better. That's kind of, like, what that is.
I always say my favorite beer is after you ski.
Yeah.
Because you're out there, you fucking bury your legs, you're dying, you're like, I earned this beer.
Yeah.
Like, after my lawn people leave now, I love having a fucking beer. It's so good.
Putting up that noise is really a hassle.
Yeah, those motherfuckers. But free ads. We don't usually do free ads, but there's a show on Siberia about living in Siberia called Happy People on Netflix. It'll change your life. There's, like, this dude who lives in Siberia who was a criminal, had to move out into the middle of the forest, like, hundreds of miles away from anybody else in Siberia. Happy People. You should check it out. My thing that I think that I would really like to go back and do again that I hated at the time was a urinalysis. Urinalysis are always a fucking good time.
Peeing in the cup. Who doesn't love that?
Like, whenever you're doing it in the military, though, like, especially a Marine, you know, we usually do it by battalion. So, like, the leadership would give you word the night before or early that morning. Instead of PT, you would show up. Usually it was PT if you're a super junior troop. You're mm-hmm. like, okay, we have battalion PT tomorrow morning, 0430. Staff Sergeant is going to check you out before you get there. So everybody's waiting in formation at like 3:45 because everybody does 15 minutes prior to 15 minutes prior. So you just keep getting earlier and earlier and earlier. Finally, the colonel shows up and tells you that you're going to have a urinalysis. And everybody usually goes to the barracks and you have like three or four penis watchers or pussy watchers, whatever they're going to watch, watching some hole in the bottom of your body that excretes urine. So you're going in there and everybody's just trying to make you laugh, you know, like. You have the people who are going to bitch about it all the time. That's why I think Barstool is pretty, like, platoon-specific. We have a lot of the normal personalities that you have.
Absolutely.
You have, like, somebody that's going to complain about everything. You have, like, a Smitty. Then you have, like, the weirdo kid, like a Nate. You're definitely going to have those in every single platoon. You have the funny guy, like Big Cat, and a lot of us. Like, that's just how it's going to be. Then whenever everybody actually starts pissing, I love it, dude. Like, my squad, if you were on my squad, you were 100% going trousers to ankles.
They're great style.
If your butt cheeks aren't swaying in the fucking wind to colors when the sun comes up, you took a urinalysis wrong. So I used to hate them because they took forever, one, and you because it was a battalion wide, and having 300 people piss takes a long time. So whenever you're doing that and they got to collect it, get your social security number and all that shit, but you didn't end up eating late. So I think I would like to go back and do a urinalysis again. And sometimes I want to get pepper sprayed again, but then
your better judgment comes over you.
Yeah, because I look at it and the videos are so fun, and not that I want to get pepper sprayed, but I want to be a part of people getting pepper sprayed.
Sure.
Especially when they're like brand new kids doing it. It's like their second time and they're still crying like a little bitch on the quarterdeck. I fucking love it, man.
Yeah.
When they just, like, when Baked Alaska got it, I was so happy because it just reminded me. I had like AJ Hawk's grass cut smell was me watching Baked Alaska get pepper sprayed in the face. I was just like, this is making me kind of nostalgic, man. Yeah. I like it.
I kind of miss the field, going out in the field, doing exercises in the field. But, I mean, we could do that today. And what you were saying, Riggs, kind of made me think about it. We could just go out and camp. So maybe we can organize a trip, just you and me, Chaps.
Yeah, but camping is so different than field ops.
Why? I agree.
Because you're choosing to camp.
Yeah.
You are doing... Anything forced sucks. Like, if there was a moment where last year I was like, fuck, man, it's time to go to Houston. And I was like, what the fuck? Like, we're going to the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
mm-hmm.
No matter what you're doing with work, eventually it gets tiresome. And that's why you see, like, sports journalists complaining all the time, because eventually it becomes a job. And that's what it – if you had told me when I was 7, hey, dude, you and, like, 200 of your closest pals – are going to go out in the woods and you're going to hang out for a week and just make fires and shit and
shoot
stuff.
Yeah, let's go.
Like, dude, that sounds sick.
Yeah.
But then I was like, nah, man, like, we're going to sleep outside. Like, I just got back from sleeping outside. We camp all the time. And now I'm looking back when I'm typing a blog on WordPress and WordPress freezes up. I'm like, well, this is the worst thing that's ever happened to me.
Just ignore that scar on your shoulder.
Yeah. I was talking to a young dude who is he's currently going to school. He's getting ready to join the ROTC program. We get a lot of ROTC questions on the show, and people are constantly asking us about the ROTC. Connor doesn't know about the ROTC because he went to West Point. I don't know about it because I'm an enlisted dude, but we got an ROTC question that we can actually answer. So here's the question. The dude asked me, when I was younger, my parents thought I had some mental issues with like OCD and took me to get treated for it a couple times. The doctor said I didn't end up having OCD, but I was checked out. And so whenever they asked me on my RTC forms, have I ever had a mental illness or anything like that, been treated for a mental illness, what do I say? Connor, what's your advice?
I would say... No, that's not important because he doesn't have it. So why would you even bother, you know, bringing that up and making it an issue for yourself? Just tell them, just mark it no.
Riggsy, what would you do?
So wait, why would he say yes?
The question is, like, has he ever been treated for it?
Well, because treated, it means have you been diagnosed, and as a result of diagnosed.
Have you ever seen a mental health professional, something like that? Someone where it's not ambiguous, like, if you, like, yes, I was diagnosed with this. The language is where it's like, have you been seen by a mental health provider?
Yeah, I think he's saying no, so you don't end up getting yourself, like, deep into something that's
not important.
Not like, yeah, right. That's what I would, that would be my advice. I would be like, no, that way you're not digging into somewhere where you don't want to be.
Absolutely. You lie your fucking dick.
Yeah, right.
Like, if you're listening and you're thinking
that's
about
good advice for life.
If you're listening and you're thinking about joining the military, which a lot of the younger people are who weren't military veteran, like, they tell us all the time, like, we're thinking about joining it. We like listening to your show because of that reason. Listen to me. Lie. Like, if they ask you, have you smoked weed? Your answer is no. Unless it was 3 weeks ago and you're going to pop on a test. And if that's the case, don't go to MEPS or don't go to anything like that until you wait like 5 weeks so it's out of your system. Lie your fucking dick off. Do you drink? No. Do you smoke weed? No. Do you have any injuries in the past? No. Have you ever had asthma? Of course not. Why do you have an inhaler in your pocket? I found that motherfucker on the way up. Like, that is what you do. You do not tell the truth. And there is going to be a point when you get to boot camp or you get to wherever you're going that they're going to sit all your swinging dicks or tits down in a chair, and they're going to give you something called the moment of truth. And the moment of truth is whenever they are telling you to your faces, we have information from your background check that said you lied. There is somebody in here that lied. Which one is it? And it's probably multiple of you that lied. So everybody put your hand down, and if you lied, put your dick skinner high in the sky. When they do that, they are fucking lying. So they don't have information. If they did, they wouldn't have brought your dumb ass to boot camp. Like, they don't have shit. They're not going to waste their time and money. Lie your fucking dicks off.
It's like in Pearl Harbor when he's failing the vision test and he's like, babe, no, it's not a problem with my vision. My vision's great. I can't read the fucking letters. And it's like, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. If you're a good pilot, you're a good fucking pilot.
Exactly.
There it goes, man. Like, just lie. Yes. Should I lie? Yes, you should lie. In most situations, it really fucking does help. Our next guest that's coming on the show is a Green Beret. He would tell you not to lie because they have way too much integrity. That show is going to be brought to you by us, ZBT. We have some new shit. If our shirt, Let's Go Bitch, doesn't start flying off the shelf, there's something drastically wrong with you. If you don't stock up on the salmon and teal sun shirts, there's something drastically wrong with you. If you don't go in there, I'm going to do a little foreplay ad. If you don't go in there and get the new Tiger Woods gear, there's going to be something drastically wrong with you. Buy ZBT. Buy foreplay. Open up your ears, your hearts, and your minds. Here comes a Green Beret. Army Green Beret. Young Connor will be happy about that. Captain Cons will be pumped to have an Army Green Beret. Anytime we get an Army guy, he's thrilled, especially a Special Forces dude. This is Staff Sergeant Ryan Jones. He's retired. He works with Your Grateful Nation, along with Rob O'Neill, Dakota Meyer, who we'll have on in a few weeks, and multiple other people. They're doing a great job trying to get special operators help transitioning out of the military, and he's going to tell you so much more. He also works for FoxSports.com right now as well. FoxSports.com or Fox Sports? Just straight up.
I actually work for the big company, Fox Sports.
Fox Sports, even bigger thing than just some piddly online version of whatever they do.
Absolutely.
So we have Staff Sergeant Ryan Jones. Ryan, how are you doing, my man?
I'm doing good. I'm doing great. How about yourselves?
We're doing well. This week's episode is, as you know, our episode comes out on Friday, but this is kind of our 9/11 week. We have 9/11 going on. And I read on your YouTube, and I watched your YouTube video, and I read up about you. And one of the main reasons why you joined the Army was because of 9/11. Can you kind of talk about that a little bit?
Well, it absolutely was. One, 9/11 happened when I was a sophomore in high school. I'm sorry, a junior in high school, actually. And, you know, that had a profound impact on me. You know, seeing all the images on TV, you know, when I first saw the images, I thought it was a movie. And I'd actually gone into a classroom and I was like, what movie are you guys watching? And they're like, no, this isn't a movie. This is live. This happened in New York. A plane just crashed into, you know, the World Trade Center. And I was like, and wow, right there. I think my decision was made. I'm joining the military. My decision wasn't the Army right then and there, but I knew I was going into the military.
Now, I've heard other elements about that. What actually did make you decide to join the Army instead of one of the other ones?
Oh man. So let me start as to why, how the Army came about with the Air Force wouldn't let me be a fighter pilot because I needed a college degree. Mm-hmm. So I said,
you don't
seem
like a nerd anyway.
Exactly. So I said, screw you guys, I'm going elsewhere. And then the Marines, they actually came to my house, gave me a practice ASVAB or whichever battery test that they were given at the time. And they ended up telling me that I wasn't smart enough for the Marines.
That seems far-fetched.
It seemed really far-fetched because I was at that point, I was like, I know you guys have seen Full Metal Jacket. Mm-hmm. I know you guys know that the Gomer Pyle term was coined from the Marines. There's no way I'm not smart enough.
Now, I want to dispel this rumor because everybody always assumes that the Marines are the dumb bunch. But statistically, Marines have the second highest of all ASVAB scores across the board.
And I wouldn't doubt that. I ended up going with the Army because the Army recruiter, she actually came to my school one day on my senior year, and she was like, hey, you want to go to McDonald's? And I was like, we can talk at McDonald's. So this was at the time when McDonald's stopped using the squirrel meat for meat and they started using real meat. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I want some chicken McNuggets. And she was like, well, fine, get whatever you want. So she got me chicken McNuggets. We talked for a few moments and I decided I couldn't say no because she just gave me some of the best chicken McNuggets I had. And yep. I was like, you know what? I'll join the Army Reserve. So
I get it. Well, we're happy you decided to join the Army. Believe me.
Trust me. It's a decision that I'm definitely glad I made, and I wouldn't change it for the world.
And I mean, did you have any family in the military? Because I mean, make that leap and just decide I'm going to join the military, even, you know, considering 9/11, is quite the jump.
Yep, I did not actually. None of my family that I know of has served in the military. I'm the first in my family for a lot of things. Joining the military, first to get a college degree, first to living on the West Coast, honestly.
Man. And then whenever you joined the military, you said that you initially joined to be a reservist. And how did that come about changing?
Well, when I joined, I started doing drills with the reserves for, you know, about 6 months or so. And I was like, this is once a weekend bullcrap. It's not for me. I either want it all or I want nothing. So I went back to my recruiter and I was like, hey, I want to go, because I joined as a military police officer to start. Mm-hmm. And I went back and I'm like, if I go active duty, I want to go special forces. I know that already. That's what I want to do. And they told me
what made
that
you,
I was
what made
too
you
young.
Want to do? What gave you the desire to become? Because that's just for those that are listening that aren't military members, taking the step up from an MP in the Army up to a special forces operator is such a jump. Physicality just the workload that you go through. It's not just a deployment thing. It's a day-to-day increase on everything that you could fucking do.
Absolutely. And I think my decision to make that jump was I've been in great shape my entire life. I was an athlete. I started working out when I was in like elementary school. My mom had like this rusty old bench set down in the basement that I would just work out on. So I was ripped going into, you know, middle school and high school already. And I was always in great shape. So I was just like, I want to push myself to the limit. However, When I joined, they told me that I couldn't actually go and be special forces right away because I was too young. This was when the Green Berets had just started their X-ray program. They were probably in like year one or two, where they take, you know, people right off the street and they say, hey, we're going to train you for about 6 months to pass just special forces selection, not become a Green Beret, but pass the 19-day course that you need to get selected to be a Green Beret. And at that time, their age limit was 21. So I was only 18. So they were like, no, you can't do it. So I was like, all right, I'll go ahead and I'll be an MP for a few years and I'll mature, get some deployments under my belt, and then I'll take that leap. So that's how that came about.
And could you go into a little more detail, because you kind of glossed over it there? To become special forces, it's not like you just, you know, decide one day and then the next week you're special forces. It's a pretty lengthy process. So could you
Absolutely.
Yeah, a little more about that.
Before you can ever become a Green Beret, you have to, number one, your unit has to approve of you going to what's known as SFAS, Special Forces Assessment and Selection. When you do that, they put you on a plane, you head to Fort Bragg, North Carolina. For me, it was 19 days. I believe it's gone up now to 21 days. Physical tests, psychological tests, teamwork tests, you know, all this stuff. And you have to literally pass all these gates over this 19 days, you know, and after you do that, they tell you at the end whether you passed or you failed or you've been selected. Here's what you're going to do. And you'll go train for between anywhere from 18 to 22 months to become a Green Beret.
What's some of the biggest bullshit things they made you do in those 19 days? Because I know you had to do some bullshit.
Honestly, it's like you had to run everywhere. And it may seem like not too big of a deal, but when, you know, you're in flip-flops and you're trying to go take a shower and you got to run through rocks and it's about a 500-yard run to the showers when you could shower, if they let you shower. That's the biggest thing that hurt me, because my pinky toes now, they look like, you know, my feet were nice before I went into the military.
You look like you have nice feet.
Yeah.
They're done now. So that was the biggest BS.
And what was the hardest obstacle that you had to overcome during that 18-month process?
I'll be honest. When you come from being an MP, you're not well-versed on everything infantry. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people look at military police as mounted infantry, but we get nowhere near the same amount of training that the infantry gets on infantry tactics and things like that. So
now,
for
me,
it was
you, because most people that go special forces come with an infantry background. I would assume it's the same way in the Army as it is for the Marine Corps. Whenever they get there, there's a certain level that they expect you to have, right? So was it anything like my experiences when I first started working with reconnaissance? Because I was an MP by trade too, as a dog handler,
uh-huh.
And they would say these combat formations to get into, and I would be like, "What the fuck are you talking about?"
Well, luckily, when you start selection, you start first. We started with language training, and every morning our team leader would basically take us out to the woods, and he would prepare us to actually go and be special forces team leaders and team members. So we learn all these formations before we actually had to pass the gates that we needed to go through to actually become a Green Beret.
That makes sense. That makes a lot more sense than me just being in the middle of Fallujah and them telling me to do something. And I was like, I don't know what you're talking about.
Absolutely. Oh, man.
So whenever you got selection, and is it the same way? Like, I know Connor's talked about it before. I've talked about it before. Whenever you finish one of these courses that are really taxing, that really make you think, that really press your mind, body, and spirit, there's got to be a moment when you graduate the Green Beret school where you're like, okay, I made it. And then you get to your actual unit and you're like, oh shit, it's just getting started again. Did you experience that?
I didn't actually. When I first got to my team, of course I was proud and everything. I went to 5th Special Forces Group. Everybody calls it 5th Ranger Battalion, because it was like the most strict group. You know, they had the most highest grooming standards. Yeah, but we also had the Middle East as our area of operation. So for me, once I got to my team, within 2 months, I was out the door and in the Middle East. So I was ready to go. As soon as I was done, I was like, this is why I became Special Forces, because I know this op tempo is going to pick up and I'm leaving. So I was ready as soon as I got there.
And whenever you actually did get there, walk us through what a day in the life being in a deployment zone is like for a Green Beret.
It's actually not as bad as people think. It's a lot more laid back. You know, we're not really doing anything until it's time to go on a mission. For us, it's like, hey, we're all always trying to stay in shape. So 9 times out of 10, we're waking up, we're doing PT. We're going to some meeting, or we're training at the range, or maybe we're, you know, training with our counterparts that we're helping out while we're there. And then once we're done that, we come back, we work out again. We'll drink, because we did have alcohol. I think a lot of military people are pretty much alcoholics by trait.
That's me.
Yeah, but the rest of us aren't fortunate enough to have it when we're deployed. So that's a nice treat.
That's very true. That's very true. And full disclaimer, I did not say that. No special operations unit in a deployment area has alcohol.
There you go.
Yeah, but, you know, I think it speaks to the fact that you guys are, and everyone knows that they can trust you with that, because to become part of that unit, you know, you're not some slapdick off the street. You've proved that you can be trusted, especially with something like alcohol in a forward deployed area. So that actually does not come as much of a surprise to me, and I don't think it should come as a surprise to many.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. But again, we never had alcohol.
Right, of course not.
And I'll leave it at that.
Nope. Of course not.
Yeah, too much discipline for that. With all your experience, walk us through one of your favorite memories of being deployed as a Green Beret.
Oh, man, I definitely got to tell this one. And I hope my buddy, who knows if he listens to you guys, he doesn't take any offense to this. But there's we were.
I like the way this is starting already.
Yeah, and I hope he does take offense.
We were deployed to one of these random countries around the Middle East. I won't say which one, but it's close to Syria. And we got the weekend off. We were training, you know, the country's elite unit to protect their president or their whatever they call over there. And we had the weekend off. And so we go to this mall and we start drinking on the roof of this mall. It's got a bunch of bars, and like me and him decided, hey, we're going to take shots at every one of these bars on this roof. It ended up being something like 19 shots.
Good idea.
So after that, sounds he like gets a Tuesday the bright for me. Idea. I'll say this is my senior engineer, my senior communication sergeant on my team that I'm with. So he gets the bright idea. He's like, hey, man, I want to get a massage. And me being a person that's been to multiple countries around the world, I'm like, most massages in most places, they're a little bit different than back in the States.
Yeah, you're going to nut. I'm like,
you said it, not me.
So, a little rub and tub.
So I'm like, hey, we're the two single guys on the team. Everybody else on my team has wives and girlfriends back home. So we're the two single guys. I'm like, hey, man, you want to go? I'll go with you. Sure. So we go to we get our driver. We had a driver with us who had to stay with us the entire time. We're like, all right, take us to a massage place. So he takes us to this one place, and I knew what it was as soon as I walked in there when they lined up the girls, and they're like, hey, you get to pick which girl you want. So I immediately saw the cutest one. I want her. And everybody else, all the other girls were a little bit manly looking. Mm-hmm. I can't say for sure if they were men or not, but they were manly looking. So my buddy, he picks his, and me, I knew what I was doing. I strictly just wanted a massage. Mine did not end with a cum.
Which is surprising, because I read before that you were stationed in Korea before you became a Green Beret, so I know your experience with those kind of places.
That is beside the point. We are not talking about my time in Korea. We are talking about my time in the
Have a couple chew highs and go get your shoulders relaxed.
Oh, man. Oh, who told you my past? This wasn't supposed to come out. But no, so we're in this massage parlor, and you know, I get my massage, and I'm done, and I'm out, and I'm waiting, and my buddy's in there a little bit longer than me. So he comes out, and the chick that he cut, because I didn't see the girl that he picked, but she comes out, and she's just like 250 pounds, probably has a small beard going on, and my buddy, I told him before he went in there, like, this is probably going to happen. I just forewarned you. And he comes out, and he's got this shocked look on his face, like, oh, I can't believe what happened. And he goes in and he tells us a story, and he's just like, I can't believe I let this happen. It did happen. He did nut.
Which I'm surprised it took him longer on that part for the massage, because usually on a deployment, whenever you're on a deployment, it's not going to take you any time.
Yeah,
you're ready to go.
Real quick to clean the pipes.
Get that poison out real quick.
So, and we get back, and he tells us the story of how everything went down. He had a cute girl to start, and then all of a sudden it changed to this, whatever it was. And that's probably one of my best from a deployment that we had.
So you had all these times, you did all your training, you got everything done, you got to use all kinds of different weapons. And it seems like your career track and your career arc was going great. You're a motivated guy. You said that you knew from the get-go, from 18 years old, you wanted to be a Green Beret. You wanted to be a Special Forces guy. Yep. What happened to make you want to get out of the Army?
Well, it started with me getting into, I wouldn't say a little bit of trouble. I was accused of doing something that I wasn't doing, that I didn't do at the beginning of 2014. Yeah, at the beginning of 2014. I decided, hey, you know what? I'm not going to end my career. My career has been too great right now, so I'll fight it this entire time. And I started fighting it. And then in June of 2014, one of my really good friends that I met while I was going through the Special Forces Q course, Staff Sergeant Jason McDonald, he was deployed to Afghanistan, and he was killed in Afghanistan. Mm-hmm. Jason, before he left, had just had a brand new daughter, and he had already had a 2-year-old. So for me, I was also a brand new parent, and I looked at myself. I took a look in the mirror and I said, can I see myself leaving my children the way Jason just did? And my answer was no. Mm-hmm. So I was given the opportunity to get out of the military, to separate, and I took it. I said, you know what? I'm done fighting. I know I didn't do it, so all I ask that you guys do for me to get out is to upgrade my discharge. So that's what they did. They upgraded my discharge, and I left peacefully.
So when then you got involved after you got out of the military. You got involved with the organization that you're helping with right now called Your Grateful Nation.
Yes.
What are you guys doing at Your Grateful Nation?
Your Grateful Nation, it's an awesome nonprofit organization. It was actually founded by Rob O'Neill. They take former special operators, and they help them transition from military to their next civilian career. And for me, at being an alumni of YGN, you know, their connections through Fox Sports is what got me in Fox Sports. I was living in Baltimore, Maryland, and 2 weeks after I told the director of Your Grateful Nation, hey, I see myself living in Los Angeles for my next career, I was on a plane flying out to Los Angeles to interview with, you know, 13 executives at Fox Sports.
Wow.
Yeah, so.
And you didn't have any experience doing anything like logistics or anything that you're doing right now, correct? Or did you?
Well, I was a special forces engineer, so logistics was my thing. But Fox Sports was all about the entertainment. They recognized what they were getting from my skills from special forces, and they were like, okay, well, let's create a position for you. So they literally created my position and brought me on.
And what is that? What are you doing for Fox Sports now?
My title at Fox Sports is the manager of operations logistics. I basically handle all the logistics for Fox Sports, and I also double as a production manager now.
Okay. And if somebody wants to help out with Your Grateful Nation, how could they do that?
Literally, yourgratefulnation.org is the website. Check it out. Look at it. I mean, it has everybody's stories. I mean, I'm on there. Most of the candidates that have been through Your Grateful Nation are on there. And literally, contact forms are there. Donation, if you want to donate, it tells you how right on yourgratefulnation.org.
So how long have you been with Fox Sports now?
I've been with Fox Sports now for about 8 months.
So in eight months, what's the best event that you've worked on so far?
I was just at UCLA to see the 34-point comeback that they just did. But I've been to the All-Star Game in Miami. I've been to the Daytona 500. I was actually at the Mayweather fight. I've been to almost every NASCAR race that went on for the start of the season, because from February to May, that's our slow season. So it's all NASCAR.
So you have kind of like me, where do you feel like you've had two separate lives, like multiple lives? Like there's the Green Beret Ryan, and then there's the Fox Sports Ryan. Do you feel that way?
Well, for me, I think I have like three different lives, because there's the Green Beret Ryan, there's the poker player Ryan, and then there's the Fox Sports Ryan.
I didn't know about the poker player Ryan. I didn't know about that.
Yeah.
You making some cash on the side?
I do make cash on the side. For the 2 years before I found Your Grateful Nation, I actually played poker for a living.
So I was going to ask that. What, I mean, you didn't just get out of the military and Your Grateful Nation was there waiting for you and said, hey, Ryan, we've been waiting for you to get out. How did you stumble upon them?
It's funny. It was. I woke up one day at my apartment. I was about to go play poker, and I caught on my TV, and for some reason it was on FS1. I think I was just seeing some stuff about the new Skip and Shannon show, Undisputed. And it was on FS1, and sure enough, the YGN commercial plays, and I was like, holy crap, let me reach out to them. And, you know, within a day, I was reached out by my censor, Gabby Trainer, and she got back to me. The next week, I was talking with Rob Clapper, the director, and the rest is history.
That's awesome, man.
And they just kind of asked you, like, hey, what are you interested in, and what do you like, and you just went from there?
They put all their candidates through a pipeline. They find out your strengths and your weaknesses, and they basically – They hired a company that'll basically tell you, hey, you'll do good in these particular type careers. And after that, that's when Rob will get back with you. And it's like, hey, what do you see yourself doing next? Where do you see yourself moving? I was the only person that said, I can see myself living in California. So he made it happen. YGN made it happen for me. And now I do.
That's awesome, man. Well, we want to thank you so much for taking the time out of your busy schedule with Fox Sports to come on and talk with us dickheads. We appreciate it.
I appreciate it.
All right,
it's been
take
awesome,
care,
man. Thank you, guys. Thank you so much.
Ma'am, I know how this looks.
I'm sorry, Lieutenant. I really am. But Army and Navy requires 20/20 vision.
Oh, it's not a problem with my eyes. I mean, I can see. I mean, I can hit a running rabbit with a $3 pistol. I got a problem with letters. That's all.
Well, maybe after some schooling, you could come back and take the test again.
No, I had schooling. I mean, the teachers just never knew what to make of it. It's just letters. I mix them up sometimes. That's all. I mean, I just get them backwards sometimes. Look here. My math and spatial reasoning and my verbal scores are all excellent.
But you barely passed the written exam.
Yeah, but you did pass it. So is it my turn now?
No, you'll wait your turn.
Yes, ma'am. Ma'am, I'm never going to be an English teacher. But I know why I'm here. To be a pilot. And you don't dogfight with manuals. You don't fly with gauges. I mean, it's all about feeling and speed and letting that plane become like a part of your body. And that manual says that a guy who's a slow reader can't be a good pilot. That file says I'm the best pilot in this room. Ma'am, please, don't take my wings.
Huge shout out to Ryan for coming on the show today. Always appreciate time when Special Forces operators, busy businessmen and women, take time to join our little program here. Any save runs and alibis, gentlemen?
Yeah, Riggs, thanks for joining us again.
Oh, wow. Thank you, boys. Thanks for having me. Feels good to be back.
Yeah.
Back in the chair.
We
back
definitely
in the
missed you. You know, in the beginning, people were like, oh, what happened to Riggs? And then, you know, we have some new listeners who have probably no idea who you are even. So if they wanted to find you and listen, because you actually just did a phenomenal recap on that trip to Scotland on this week's episode. I listened. It was very interesting, very fun, and informative. Where can they find you?
Foreplay on iTunes, Podcast One, although not for very long. Suck at Podcast One. But, yeah. You can rate, review, subscribe, Foreplay. We talk golf every week. It's fantastic.
Yeah. No, it's a great podcast. I enjoy it each week. You guys have phenomenal guests, and they've gotten better and better each week, guys that are in the mix. So it's certainly very interesting. And I guess to you chaps, I would say happy one-year anniversary, pal.
Yeah, man.
It's gone quickly. It feels maybe even more than a year. But overall, it's been a fun first year, and I think we got some fun things planned for the future.
Congrats, boys. One full year. Hell of a
That's
program.
That's crazy, dude.
Started something out of thin air. I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. It's been a good time for sure. It's been a good time. It's been a great fucking year for Barstool. Like, I just passed my one-year mark with Barstool as well, and we got big things coming, like the Laces Out podcast, like we said earlier. We have Section 9 that goes on Facebook damn near fucking every day. That show is phenomenal. If you're an old school guy that likes baseball like me, you're definitely going to want to check out Section 9. We have
Starting 9.
We have
Starting 9.
Excuse me. What did I say?
Section 9, because you're thinking of Section 10.
Oh, Section 10. Yeah. So Starting 9 with Jared Carabas and Dallas Breeden. But anyways, we have all kinds of stuff that's happening. We're going to have a college football show. If you like the old school baseball tonight, the old school feel of Sports Center, where it wasn't just a bunch of clips and this is like 30 for 30 style stuff. Just baseball dudes talking baseball shit. Guys, girls, whoever. You're going to love all the stuff that we're going to be doing live on Facebook. So make sure that you check this out. Thanks for listening, everybody. And seriously, go make us pass fucking Bernie. If you haven't left a comment, go leave a comment. I don't care if you talk shit to us. Go talk shit to us because we want to move past Bernie again because Bernie's a motherfucker. He's not really that. I don't mind Bernie. But I do mind. Oh, my save round. There was. I don't even remember what this bitch's name is.
All Jesus. Right.
He's a congressman and he's a motherfucker from Illinois. He came on this week, and I haven't been like super pro anything in the Trump organization at all. And if you listen to the show at all, you know I'm not a big Trump supporter. I don't support a lot of the stuff that they do inside the administration. But if you are a congressman who has never put on the uniform, you have no fucking place to ever say a four-star general disgraced his uniform by a policy decision that he didn't even make. Like, yes, he is the chief of staff, but no, he doesn't sign executive orders because he is the chief of staff, mm-hmm. not then. That dude is also a gold star father. He lost his son in Afghanistan.